Is a war, so I ain't giving you no tax for war. You stick your tax up, you crack your government holes. I said no tax for war, cause the debt is what you're fighting for. So I said no tax for war, gonna stick my cash in a stash under the floor. I said no tax for war, cause the debt is what you're fighting for. Government halls. I said no tax for war, cause the debt is what you're fighting for, boys. So I ain't paying no more. I said the debt is what you're fighting for, boys. So I ain't paying no more. Yeah, the debt is what you're fighting for. So I.
That was Litmus with No Tax for War. I've got Litmus still back on the line there with me. Litmus, you still hear me all right?
Yeah, it's all sounding pretty sweet over here, maybe.
Very good. And so we're going to, after a bit of a musical break there, we're going to move on to what you call Phase 6 on your website, which is Project Break Free, which involves the breaking free of control of consciousness by clocks, calendars and constellations, one of my own favourite subjects. And your first universal community trust calendar, what does that involve for you then? Where did you start on that one?
Yeah, I'm let's use the slides if we can, if people got the link there.
I'll put it in there. You can download it really quickly, it appears, and it's dead easy to see. I think it's a really clever piece of technology. You'll have to tell me how it works.
Okay. Yeah, so hopefully you got the Dropbox link and you can open up the proposal to the Universal Community Trust, and we're going to talk a bit about that later. So if you've got that file, let's skip on to, because you've introduced it nicely there, the first page. Forgetting the clocks and the constellations for a moment, we're just going to look at the calendar aspect, which is slide 2. And then slide 3. Here we go. So this is where I got to. The background. You see that background, time to be?
Yeah, mine's still arriving. It is. I'll be able to look at it in about 40 seconds, apparently. So carry on. Hopefully, the stream's all still looking pretty good. So You carry on, sir, and I'll let you know when I'm in there.
Okay, sweet. All right. Yeah, well, you'll see. I mean, so this is now, you know, I'm on the road in the camper van, and I've done the time to see thing and using Freeman stuff to get.
Could you just lean back from your microphone a bit again?
Sorry, my man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Done it. Thank you very much.
So, again, this is the time to be. That's okay. Welcome. This is the time to be phase. And it's about being like one with nature and meditating and being in harmony with the natural cycle. So you kind of find, I found I was kind of waking up with the sun and then and going to bed with the sun, you know?
Yeah.
This is one of the beaches I was hanging out on, a little beach called Furnash down in the Algarve with a couple of guys most of the time. And, you know, you find when the sun starts to set, because this is winter, that's a winter shot, okay? If you've got slide 3 open yet, but...
Yeah, I've got it now. I can see it.
So that's a shot in the middle of winter. But when the sun starts setting to the right over the... because it's a little valley, you know. Once it starts setting behind the hill, and you can start to feel it getting a little bit chilly, and you think it was time to start getting the fire going and preparing for the evening, you know, and togging up a bit, getting your woolies on. And so, you know, you're just kind of going with the natural cycle. The sun comes up and it goes down again, and the planet keeps spinning. So, but if you skip onto slide 4, one of the guys I was hanging out with was actually into the whole Druid stuff. And he was a Bozeman and a Wiccan priest, I think, in eventually, you know, not priest in the sense of the Catholic sense of the word, but he had a book about the Druids, the Bards and the Ovates. And
yeah, I know. I think I probably know the book you mean, because I've had truck with the Order of Bards and Druids, I think they call themselves, been on a couple of their camps, and I think you're talking about one of their set texts, and as far as they have any.
Yeah, well, that's it. It was exactly that. That's the one. It's a nice bit of synchronicity there.
Well, I had a great time with them. It was a fantastic camp. It really was. Talk about people getting loads of stuff together, sports days and carnivals, and feeding like 200 people twice a day out of the tent run by volunteers, and it was another one of those ones that was a bit like going home. I really liked those people.
Yeah, it is like coming home, isn't it? And I was reading about the ancient eightfold year, you know, and I just sketched it out in my journal and stuff, and it just got me thinking again, because like you probably, I've over the years, as I've got more and more out free and stuff, I've always kept coming back to this the cycles of time and the cycles of nature and the cycles of the universe and the whole calendar thing and how that's tied into it. So, you know, I was looking at the eightfold year, that got me thinking. And then if you skip on to number 5, I'm then at one of my favorite spots, up on the cliffs at Moretta Beach, and you'll see over in the distance, that's the West Atlantic. So if you keep going that way, you hit the East Coast of America. And then to the left, you got the South Atlantic down towards Africa. But basically on that spot, you can watch the sun coming up in the east behind you and the moon setting in the west on a full moon. It sets over that fort in the top left corner of that picture.
Shows you how important a bit of elevation is to the sun and the moon watching.
Oh, yeah, you know, and on a full moon, the moon's setting in the west over that fort, and then the sun's in the east coming up at the right, and you can feel it, like, turning. You can almost feel the planet spinning from west to east, you know?
Yeah.
As the two luminaries, you know, one's setting and one's rising. Really amazing. But, you know, I was there for 3 days in that spot. Just sort of hanging out and meditating and writing my morning musings and in my journal, as I call them, and stuff. And I'm looking at this beach, you know, yeah, go on.
That's another important thing, isn't it? Really helpful to write things down, because it's amazing how much of these good ideas you forget if you don't catch them as they come by.
Totally, totally, man. I mean, I got reams and reams of stuff in my journals, which I'm gradually trying to catch up with now and get on the website. But it's, yeah, definitely the morning musings, as I call them. When you wake up with the sun and the energy's really good and it's a lovely, bright, sunny day. And you can just lie in your, with your camper van door open and the sea air coming in, and you can lie in your bed and watch the sun come up and just open your mind again and, you know, see what comes. And but 3 days running, this beach was like this. There was no one on it. And this is in a town, you know, this is one of the more, the busy places down there. It's a place called Sagres. So you can look it up. It's in the, right in the bottom southwest corner of Europe.
Yeah.
Basically. You know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, it's a lovely beach and there's no one on it. You know, midday there'd be a few walking up and down and stuff. But, and then if you click on to the next one, number six, I just started thinking, well, what's going on? You know, you've got this beach, it's empty on these so-called weekdays. And then I found that the fourth day I was hanging out there, I opened my curtains and it's packed. The beach is packed and there's surfers everywhere and vans packed and loads of stuff going on. And I, you know, because I didn't know what day it was. I was, every day was free. So I didn't worry about if it was a weekend or a weekday or whatever, you know. And of course, this one day it's really busy. And I realized, I looked in the book and it was a Saturday. So I thought, well, you know, you got, everyone's doing the same thing at the same time. And they're all on the beach on the weekend and then they all go to work on the Monday and, you know, they're all going to work at the same time. So all the infrastructures has to be sized for the peaks, which means it costs more and it means creates more debt. And it gives you this impression of overcrowding and makes you a bit stressed and you're sitting in a traffic jam or whatever. And you feel like the place is overpopulated, you know. And, of course, it's not. It's just that everyone's doing the same thing at the same time because of the calendar.
Yeah, and the same thing applies to rush hours and stuff, doesn't it? The so-called drive time when you can't drive anywhere because everyone's jammed up.
Yeah, drive time, exactly. It's like being in a car park, isn't it? So the page seven there was the realisation, this kind of, I don't think this is even a word, but it is now, calendrical control. And I started thinking about calendars and I did a little bit. I didn't have any internet at the time. I remember, I didn't have a dongle and to get any internet. I didn't have a laptop either at this point, and I had to go into internet cafes and things to get internet and stuff. So I couldn't do a lot of research, but certainly got this feeling that initially they'd come in through the royals and very much through religion, this kind of call to prayer, rituals and things. And this whole 7 day week thing, which kind of makes no sense. If you think that all, as you know, the weekdays are named after the seven visible planets, and planet in Greek means wanderers, doesn't it? So it's the ones that wander around the ecliptic. So you got the two luminaries, the sun and the moon, and then the five visible planets, Mercury, Venus. Obviously, we got the Earth, but we're on the Earth, so we don't count that one. Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And that's what I found out later, that's what they call the first octave. And that kind of corresponds to the seven notes of the musical scale and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this 7 day week thing, you know, why have we got a 7 day week? Some of it's, I think, misinterpretation of the creation myth, you know, and God rested on the seventh day and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they found seven tablets, so we ended up with 7 days.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, a lot of that, as you know, is allegorical. It's not meant to be taken literally. But in the age of ignorance, and again, we'll come on to what that means a bit later, but, I certainly felt, so I'm lying in my camper van thinking about all this stuff and opening my mind and, you know, I'm thinking, well, what about the other planets, you know, that we've since not discovered, but we've rediscovered.
So you, with this 7 day week thing, you got the working 5 or 6 days and worshipping on the seventh. And depending if you, one of the three main organized religions, you know, depending if it's like Muslim, Judaic or Christian, it's a Friday, Saturday or Sunday, you know. But obviously the calendar that we've kind of ended up stuck with, the Gregorian one, is a Roman calendar, which kind, it's kind of been imposed on the planet ultimately through, again, through the expansion of the British Empire and all of that, and the American Empire. So we've ended up with modern states really using that to control the masses. So it's kind of all about work, work, work again. And there's, it's all about doing, 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 and no time to be in, you know.
You know, I think the first time the calendar was introduced in these islands, it came straight out of monasteries where they were interested in actually getting people to do the same thing at the same time of day across the piece, as it were.
Well, there you go, yeah. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this a few times, but at the U2 Festival a couple of years back, came across this phrase "doobie doobie doo," you know, sing a little doobie doobie doo song.
Yeah, that's Amit Goswami, I think, with the physicist, who says it's his motto, because you've got to do and be and do.
But, yeah, and I loved. I thank you for telling me who it is. I need to source that when I put it on there. But yeah, doobie doobie doo, you know. So have a bit of time doing. That's cool. We all got to do stuff, but you know, time to just be is really important.
It's where the inspiration for the next doing comes from, isn't it?
Exactly, which is what this bit's all about, you know, time to be. So, you know, the conclusion of that was there must be a better way, you know, there must be a calendar that actually fits in with what's actually there and what's actually happening, rather than what's been kind of made up to control everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you go on to page 8, my little voice is going, you need to do a new calendar. You know, I'm having a little chat with myself saying, oh, what, you know, what, why, really? And it's going, yeah, you know, yeah, do a new calendar. If you don't like the old one, come up with a new one. So I'm like, okay, well, that'll be a bit of fun, you know. It's a good little project. So I walked on the beach and I wrote Project Break Free in the sand, and started thinking about, well, what if I did do a new calendar, what would it be? What would it look like? And what would be the aims of it? So it was very much for me about breaking this kind of Roman grip on perception. What the Gregorian calendar calls 2013 now, CE, which was meant to be common era. Of course, it's not a common era at all for the planet. It's a Christian era. From, I think, which was decided at the Council of Nicaea in 325 or
yes,
whatever.
I think that's right. Yeah, that's when they...
Constantine and all that.
Yeah.
And when they decided which bits of the Bible to put in and which to leave out, you know. And they left out all the Gnostic kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's all about looking inside and the answers are within and all that. And you know, and they put the stuff in that talks about, you know, following the priest and all of that. But, you know, that's a whole nother conversation about the astrotheology, you know, allegory of the Bible and everything and all the religious texts. But anyway, breaking free of that Roman thing and thinking about, well, what is the actual common era, you know? And really all we want a calendar to do is to kind of reflect nature and to give us a common reference that we can use for social and community use, but something that will work for wherever you are on the planet, you know, not just if you're in the northern hemisphere or the south or whatever, you know. The thing is very, very dominated by the northern hemisphere at the moment, because that's where the Europeans have all come from and gone out around the world,
yeah,
with their various empires imposing their system of control on everyone and all the indigenous peoples, you know.
Yeah.
So we want, you know, I was thinking, well, let's have a calendar that's common for everyone. And it reflects the true nature and reality of what I call astronomology.
Now, that is a new word.
Yeah, you know, but it's because it's, for me, it's a balance between science and spirituality. It's, you need both, you know, you need the yin and the yang. So you need the astronomy, but you also need the astrology, you know, and they're very, very heavily linked.
What's your opinion of astrology?
Well, I used to think it was a load of tosh, to be honest, and now I'm absolutely fascinated and I'm heavily into it. Because now I've kind of looked at it properly, I understand the science behind it. That's my big thing at the moment, actually. I'm big into astrology at the moment.
Well, it's all energy, isn't it? And it is simply the effects of energy fields upon us, but we've given them all labels and
totally. It makes ultimate. I mean, if you think about it from a physics point of view or a chemistry point of view, it makes complete sense. But as you know, the true astrology is based on your birth chart. It's not looking in the sun for your star sign, which is only it's only the 30 degrees of the ecliptic that the sun happens to rise in on the day of your birth. You know, that's one little bit of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to think, well, how can everyone who's born in a month all be the same, you know? And of course they're not the same, because when you put your moon sign and where all the planets are and your ascendant and your midheaven and all the other things in there, you know, you've got a massive different gravities and radiations and all going on and interacting and crossing over at the same time at the moment that you're born, you know.
And you'd have to be born in the same place at exactly the same moment in order for the two things to be the same.
Exactly. You'd have to be twins at least. But then you've also got the other aspect of it, which is the 9 months in the gestation period in the womb, where your body is developing in the physical side of it. But you know, your soul isn't there yet. So there is a genetic element to it as well, which makes maybe twins slightly different, but their astrology might be, you know, is what's going to be very similar.
So big into
astrology at the moment, and actually the where I'm sitting right now, some guys I met quite recently were actually from my home town of Barry in South Wales, South Cymru. Elaine here, she had a book on her shelf called Astrology for All, and it's written in 1908 by a guy called Alan Leo, who was called the father of modern astrology. So that's great. And I mean, that's a whole nother section. That's actually going to be phase 7 now.
Yeah.
Of the website.
You've got plenty of work to do, haven't you?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I got lots of, but it's great. You know, I love it. It's not like work, is it? It's like, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's great. So yeah, what I've called All Is One at the moment, that's going to be astrology. That's going to be about astrology. But anyway, so if you look at the true nature, you've got the sun and you've got nine major spirals around it, or in the helix behind it, if you look at Rasillian stuff. Anyway, you got 10 major bodies, and you've got four seasons and 12 zodiac signs. So that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
But also I wanted the calendar to give us more time to be and less work. You know, more rest and play and less work. So just to balance that up again, because this working 5 or 6 days out of 7 and worshipping on the 7th day is just not on, you know.
Yeah. No time to be in that.
Exactly. So, and I wanted it to be simple to remember. So I wondered if it could be perennial, if it could just repeat without it changing all the time.
So,
you know,
yeah,
none of this like 28 days in 1 month and 30 in another and 31 in another. And this year it's a Friday and next year it's a Saturday and whatever.
As I never tire of saying, if somebody gave you a physical ruler that worked like that, where the first inch was a different size from the second inch, which was a different size from the third inch, you'd give it back and ask for a proper one.
Of course you would. Exactly. and ultimately, I just wanted a calendar that we could use as a bridge to break free until we realize we don't actually need a calendar. I mean, we'll talk about the golden age later, but, you know, in the golden age, you don't need calendars because you communicate telepathically and stuff. So
yeah,
but that's a whole nother discussion. But so that's what I was kind of aiming for, and then the next slide, 9. Again, it's looking at a calendar for where we actually are. You know, we're on the Earth, in the solar system, in the galaxy, in the universe. You know, and that links back to those 9 worlds. You know.
Yeah.
So skipping on to 10, what are the numbers? You know, because obviously a calendar is a numerical measure as well. And the numbers of our reality are all to do with sacred geometry. They're numbers in space. I like this idea that maths is the universal language and numbers are its words. So what are the numbers that we find? You know, where are we? Where we are? What are the numbers there? So then I got into the cycles, you know. So let's have a look at the 3 cycles. So
the perennial challenge of your calendar maker.
Yeah, exactly. So slide 11 just looks at the 3 cycles. So you got the day, the year, and the great year.
Yeah.
But this is something I've added in more recently once I got to the end and realized exactly what was going on. I didn't, when I started doing this, I didn't have the great year in there. Because I only found out about that as I started looking at and opening up to what this calendar was going to be, you know.
So your great year is the 26,000 year galactic sort of processional cycle, is it?
It is, yeah. Or maybe it's an average of 24,000, but we'll talk about that. Yeah. So the day, the year, and the great year, and what I realized quite recently is that the day starts at midnight. So if you imagine a circle, you're at the bottom of the circle. So 0 degrees at the bottom, that's midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 180 degrees from there up the top, that's the top of the circle. So you could call that noon.
Yeah.
So if that's a 24-hour clock, that's noon. And then quarter way round, you got 6 a.m. and 3/4 way round, you got 1800 hours.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So actually, the day cycle starts at the bottom at midnight, or what you could call midnight, 0 degrees. The year actually starts at what you might call 6 a.m. or 90 degrees. And the great year starts at the top at noon. And so then the question is, maybe there's a fourth cycle that starts at 1800 hours.
Yep.
But that, you know, let's leave that for now.
Yeah, still looking for that. Eh?
Well, I know. I think I know what that is. I think that's the solar year. So that's the cycle of the sun around the Milky Way.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't want to even get into that at the moment. There's too much already. So
yes.
We haven't got all night, have we?
No.
So let's skip on. So cycle 1, the day that, the rotational spiral of the Earth around its axis, and then that got me remembering about a thing I'd started doing many years back, site by a guy called Peter Russell. So if you skip on to 13, I've got Peter Russell's site there,
yeah,
and he's got a thing about counting your age in days. So you can go there and you can put in your birthday and it'll tell you how many days old you are. So you can look at how many cycle ones you've had so far.
Yes.
And celebrate every day, you know? So I like the one aspect of this, of a calendar, being the fact that you measure every day and you celebrate every day, and you can have a birthday every day. If you know what time you were born, you can celebrate every day at that time.
Yeah.
Instead of an anniversary, you can have a daily celebration.
And you are kind of born anew every day.
Exactly. New day, new sun. Happy new day, Nick.
Yeah, happy new day. I like that one.
Or Ben, yeah. Right, so cycle 2, 14, cycle 2, the year. There's another rotational spiral, the Earth around the sun. And that's got a bit left over because of precession. So the sidereal year is 0.2422 days longer than the tropical year. because one measures the processional rate. So you have to take into account leap years. So if you count, you go on to 15, you'll see the way I did that was using, this is what they currently still use in the Iranian calendar, which is based on the old Persian calendar.
There's still a lot of calendars running on there.
Yeah, and they, I mean, we have, in the Gregorian, we have the leap year every 4 years, except on centuries, you know, ending in 00. But this cycle looks at 8 leap years in 33 on that basis, 1, 5, 9, 13, 17, 22, 26, and 30. And that, if you divide 8 by 33, you get 0.2422, which is the closest match to the point, 0.2424, which is the closest match to the 0.2422.
Yeah, and that's pretty accurate over quite a long period of time.
I think something like 2 million years or something. Mm. Don't quote me on that, but yeah, a long... long
good,
period.
Good enough for our purposes.
Good enough, eh? Yeah, good enough for jazz, man.
Yeah.
So then I looked at the equinoxes and the solstices as part of that cycle. So what that gives you is a number 5. It gives you 1 for the sun in the middle, and then 4 major Earth solar events called equinoxes and solstices, which give us the 4 seasons. So we can actually have 5 special days. So that the number there is 5.
Yeah.
1 for the sun, one for each equinox and solstice. And then skipping on to 17, you'll see that in the ancient solar cross. And the symbol for the Earth is a circle with a cross in, which is For me, it's symbolic of the, you know, the sun in the middle and the crossing points of the two solstices and the two equinoxes.
Yes, I think that's been used by so many peoples across the globe for such a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been there a long time. Then we get into number 18. Then we get the number 12 coming out because we've got the ecliptic divided into 12 zodiac reference points of 30 degrees each.
Yeah.
And you know, then when I didn't know this at the time, I was confused at the time about why Aries is in Pisces. Okay. Cause I, at that time I didn't understand, how astrology used the terms versus how astronomy uses them, but I do now. So we can talk about that. But basically all the sun sign is nothing to do with the, you know, if you're an Aryan, if your sun sign is Aries, it's nothing to do with the constellation of Aries. That's a marker point for the great year, but it's about the 30 degrees of the circle from the spring equinox in the north, the Novenox, as I call it now.
Yeah.
the northbound equinox from there, 30 degrees, that's Aries. And for about 2,000 years in a 24,000-year cycle, the constellation of Aries will actually be in that 30 degrees of the ecliptic.
So we're talking effectively about 30-degree segments of an imaginary circle bounding the Earth and the solar system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Rather than a sphere, which is what astronomy deals with.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a circle painted on the inside of a sphere, I guess, isn't it? Which is what that little graphic's trying to show, which I found on Wikipedia or something.
Nice picture.
Yeah. So, you know, the red circle there is the celestial equator, and the other way around. So the one circle's the equator, and the other one is the ecliptic, the path of the sun. Yeah. The red one's the ecliptic. And the other one is the equator, and where they cross is an equinox.
Yeah.
So you can see the yellow arrows pointing at the equinox.
Yeah, I can see them.
And it's pointing roughly at where it is at the moment in Pisces. So that big green V-shaped thing is Pisces. And Aries is the little one a little bit to the left of that and up a bit, up above the ecliptic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the the spring equinox in the north at the moment is in the constellation of Pisces, but the 30 degrees of the ecliptic from there will always be called Aries. So that's how it works. Anyway, so you got the number 12 coming out. So if we skip on to 19, then you've got the 13 months in the year where the moon cycle overlaps with the sun cycles. So instead of 12 months, you get 13 months with the 28-day, you know, roughly 27, 28-day cycle of the moon.
Yeah, so it accumulates an extra month, effectively.
Yeah. So that's described by what's called the metonic cycle, I found out, which is another Greek term, I think. It's just, if you start off at any reference point with the sun and the moon in a certain position, it will take 19 years till they spiral around and come back to an equivalent point.
Yeah, I think there was actually a Greek character called Meton who was the first to write it down.
Yeah, but I think he was probably writing down stuff from earlier.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But he, you know, it's named after him, yeah.
Yeah.
So the next slide, 20, is just a write-up off of Wikipedia about the metonic cycle. So I'm not going to go through that now.
Oh, very good.
You can take that offline. So 21, just thinking now about... So we've looked at all the other stuff, and now thinking about what are the true days of the week. You know, who else is in this solar system apart from us? We've actually got 10 celestial spirals. So we've got the sun spiraling around the Milky Way, followed by 9 spheres in its wake. So, you know, we've got 10, not 7. That's the point.
Yeah.
So maybe we should have a 10-day week, not a 7-day week. Well, so if you skip on, yeah.
You're turning the week metric.
Yeah. That's right. So I didn't call it a week. But yeah. Skipping on to 22, what might be the sixth day or the sixth spiral, the asteroid belt. There's a lot of stuff, if you look at that, to suggest there was a planet there once, maybe. There's now a little orb called Ceres there, which is treated in astrology still. But, you know, it's possible there was a much bigger planet. Some people call it Marduk or Tiamat, depending who you read. But even the science kind of supports that, because the Boyle's Law, which is what that graph is, suggests that there should be a planet in that space between Mars and Jupiter.
Yeah.
So maybe we should have a day for that as well.
That gives us 11 days.
No, well, that will give us 9, because Pluto isn't actually a planet, is it? It's more like Ceres is. It's very small and it's got a different orbit. And it's been declassified in science as a planet anyway.
Yeah, fair enough.
So with the Sun and the 9 out to Neptune, including the asteroid belt, or what I call Tiamat, because I'm kind of going with the fact that there was a planet called Tiamat there.
Yeah, I think, again, the difference between Tiamat and Marduk is depending on whether you're looking at Sumerian or Babylonian texts, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. So anyway, you know, there's an orbit there. At the moment, there's a load of rocks in it, the biggest one of which is called Ceres.
Yeah.
But it gives us 10 days to the week, basically. And then I got into, you know, what would the year be? Actually, it's not too... Because I did this last year, because I've been living on this new calendar for, you know, a year and a half now. But, you know, they say that 2012 is CE, the common era. What is the true common era? Because all that is just AD, the Gregorian Christian era, actually kind of imposed on the rest of the planet, you know.
Yes, the numbers tell you, don't they? The numbers tell you that that's what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And then I then went on the internet for a bit and looked at, you know, some calendars which are still in existence and still being used, mostly religious based. And the year can be anything from 7521 in the Byzantine calendar, which is supposed to be the age of how old the earth is in that sort of text, down to 5772 in the Hebrew, 5113 in the old Hindu stuff, which was kind of a misinterpreted version of the text, and then coming all the way down to 1391 in the Iranian calendar, which is again still in use now. So, you know, they can't all be right, can they? So surely there's an actual year number in a cycle that isn't based on a religion and that can actually be common for the whole planet, you know, regardless of what religion you are or where you are on the planet.
So that'll not only break us away from the kind of instrument of Roman control that we've got a great deal of confusion as a result, but it would also tend to lead to a more common vision, one would hope.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. You know, we're all sharing the ship humanity, you know, and we're all in it together. We're all on the same little world spiraling around the galaxy, and how can we all have a different year number? It doesn't make sense. So, yeah, so I started looking at that. So then I got into this whole, you know, the 24,000-year yuga cycle. The Hindus call it the yuga cycle. So this is slide 24 now. And Plato called it the great year.
Yeah.
And it's basically the procession of the equinoxes. So, and now at this time, I thought that the theory of what causes this was the wobble of the Earth's axis, and it's called the lunisolar wobble theory. And it was because it was proposed by Isaac Newton, it's kind of been taken as fact. But you know, it's not actually been proven. It's just the current mainstream accepted version. But then I came across this stuff actually through Michael Abinicia, mm-hmm. at Mutu, I think it was, who he said, "Oh, have a look at this yoga cycle thing. You know, it's something on my website. Check it out." That was it. That's all he said, and I checked it out, and then I got into this whole binary star theory because this guy Swami Sri Yukteswar Giri wrote a book called The Holy Science in 1894 in the Gregorian calendar. And he talked about the sun having a jewel. So if you skip on to,
and most stars are thought to be binary systems, aren't they? They are supposed to be. Yeah.
I think the current NASA estimate is as high as 80%.
Yeah.
But I'm sure my brother, if he's listening, he can correct me on that one because he's big into the NASA stuff. So, but I think, you know, it's a pretty big number.
Yeah.
But then this is a little aside, but you know, being a big Beatles fan, I was actually at my brother's house putting some slides together about some of this to present at the Venus Love, I think it was, festival again. And I realized that this guy, I don't know if you can see him there, but Sri Yukteswar Giri, he's on the Sgt. Pepper cover. So if I zoom in on slide 26, there he is.
Right next to Aleister Crowley, as we noticed the other day.
Right next to Aleister Crowley, yeah. And George Harrison apparently insisted on his inclusion. And he's number one. He's listed number one on the cover when you get the schedule, you know, of who all those people are. So nice one, George. Yeah.
Hints and guesses hidden everywhere, eh?
Yeah, man. I realised I'd been looking at this guy most of my life since I was about 10, you know. Because I love Sgt. Pepper, of course, and there he was, right in the corner. So, but there, slide 27. That's his quote out of the Holy Science. So I won't read it, but you can read it yourself. It just talks about the sun having a jewel and the orbit around the jewel pulling it nearer and further away from the seat of Brahma or the grand center.
His material is very interesting to look at. I've had a quick glimpse of bits of it when I've been in the same place as Michael in his books.
Mm.
He's definitely pretty high on my list for some good-looking information.
Yeah, well, I've been really skint, you know, the last 3 years on the road, and I haven't been able to afford to buy books and stuff, but I'm hoping to get a copy of The Holy Science, because I would like to actually read the actual thing, you know, rather than having to get bits off the internet. But
well, the thing is, so often these standard models, like the Newtonian one that you talked about, so often they are actually embodying something that's much older and much more fully informed.
Hmm. Definitely, you know, and there's a guy called Walter Cruttendon who's written a book, which I got and read, and my brother did too, and we had a little debate about it. But it's called Lost Star of Myth and Time, and it explores this Hindu, you know, theory in the old text about the sun having a jewel, and it looks at the science behind whether that's possible or not, you know, and it's very very engaging and very plausible. You know, and I kind of think there probably is a jewel, but it doesn't really matter what the cause of it is. What the fact is, you know, it gives us this processional cycle. It moves the equinoxes backwards through that 360 degrees we were looking at of the zodiac earlier.
And that's what caused all the chaos in the earlier calendars. That's why
exactly.
We had to keep dropping 11 days and the like, isn't it? It's because otherwise, slowly but surely, your equinoxes would move to where your solstices were and all would
exactly.
go awry. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So because they weren't accounting, you know, and I would now say that's because it was the age of ignorance and they didn't know any better, you know. But we didn't know any better. And we weren't accounting for precession. So this about 50.3 arc seconds per year movement, you know, which if you average it out takes about 24,000 years to do 360 degrees. So that's what the great year is all about. So it's like a big clock in the sky. So that's our third cycle. So if we go on to 28, cycle 3, that's the great year, yuga cycle. And there's a graphic of it.
That's the subject of a whole show on its own, that particular diagram.
Well, it is, you know, and we haven't got time now, but let's just say that's what I used for the year, the measurement of the year that we're actually in as a common era.
Mm-hmm.
So I started at the top of that golden age bit there, and then you got a descending cycle of 24,000 years.
Yep.
Into the Kali Yuga or the Iron Age, and then an ascending half of 12,000 years back up to the top again. And, you know, where we've been through our recent history, if you go with this theory, is we've been through what the Greeks call the Iron Age, the Hindus call the Kali Yuga, and it's 2,400 years.
So we're just at the beginning of an ascending cycle.
Well, we're into the what they call the Bronze Age, about 314 years into the Bronze Age, which is called in that hypothesis is called the Electric Age.
how just is that?
Yeah, yeah, it kind of all fits, you know. And then the Silver Age is called the Age of Magnetism when we understand that fully.
One of the basic ideas there is that electricity is the cause of all movement, and magnetism leads to stillness.
That's right, exactly.
So it's only right that we should be entering such a frenzied state of motion.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, I really resonate with this theory. You know, at some point we'll prove one way or the other whether it's true or not, but there certainly seems to be a lot of resonance with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I looked at that cycle, and if you skip on to 29, you find the year number in the great year. If you start at the top of the golden age, 2012 Gregorian was 18,313 years from when the golden age began. But if you look at what Yukteswara Giri says is that the cycle starts at the peak of the golden age, or 12 noon, as I called it, when the first point of Aries, or at the subenox, so the southbound equinox, what we would call in the north, in the northern hemisphere, we'd call that the autumnal equinox.
Yeah.
So when that started, the first point of Aries, that's the start of the cycle, and it's actually, I worked out it was 13,513 years ago, so that was the year I took as our common era.
Yep. Yep. I okay. Like that. Yes. Yep. Very yep. Good.
And my brother really liked that because I should explain my brother Kevin, or you know, we call each other Weed actually, but that's a long story. He was desperate to break out of the Gregorian calendar as well. Mostly because he gets really affected by the whole bollocks that you get around Christmas time, you know?
Yeah, that's as good a reason for breaking out of it as any.
Yeah.
Once again, everybody doing the same thing at the same time.
Exactly. It's crazy, you know, and all this commercialism and religious stuff, you know, this kind of imposed on everyone.
Several days for burying bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we, you know, we went, I said to him, look, this is what I'm going to use. And he loved it. So that's what we went with. So if we skip on to 30, I also then looked at the, because, you know, this golden age, this yoga cycle thing, it's a bit alternative and it's a bit kind of hippie and it's a bit more spiritual. But I thought, well, let's keep the science guys happy as well. You know, let's have a common era that'll cover what they think as well. And
yeah.
And my brother told me about the Holocene era, the human era, which the scientists say is when, if you believe in the linear evolution, like based on Darwinian theory of human development, which I don't personally, but, you know, there's a lot of people who do. So, you know, we do want a common era for everyone. And they say we should add 10,000 years to cover that. So, rather than 2012, it would be 12,012. So, and I like that because my 13,513 covered it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of keeps the science people happy as well.
I like Holocene as well. It's a word I've always been keen about. I think they should put the W back at the beginning of it, though.
Mm. The Holocene, yeah. So there we go. Number 31. How are we doing for time, mate?
Well, right. We've got, according to the clock, it rumours us to have about 15 minutes left, but I'm just checking to see if anybody else wants to stream after me, because it seems to me we should follow this at the pace you're going and get to the end of it. If you're happy to carry on, I am. I'm not sure there's anybody scheduled after us, so.
Okay. Well, we're pretty much there on the calendar.
Yep. I want to have a bit of time to talk about the Troubadours Trust, but I think the time is there. So do carry on, sir.
Okay. Well, let's, if you're going to play the Golden Age, at least it'll make a bit more sense to people now because, you know, after what we've just talked about.
Yeah.
So where I got to was I came up with this calendar. At the time I called it the Planetary Freedom Calendar, which is quite a pretentious title, really. And I remember posting
again, the words are as important as the numbers, aren't they? We are trying to cast different spells.
Yeah, you know, and I remember my eldest boy Chris when I first posted it in Facebook or something, you know, and he said, "Well, how is a calendar going to free people?" You know, and so we had a bit of a debate about that. But basically, it's what's now called the Universal Community Trust Calendar, as of last solstice.
Yeah,
and up until then, it was called the Universal Community Calendar. So, so it's 1 year of these four Earth solar events, the equinoxes and solstices. So it gives you five special cardinal days in astrology. And
there's another common point with the Maya. They have five special days, but they bundle them all together at the end of the year instead of disposing of them equally throughout, as you have.
Yeah, well, and I found that that's what they all did. The ancient Egyptians did the same thing. So they had a 5-day festival of the dead.
That's right.
they lumped all the 5 days into one bit at the end, as you say. And the French Revolutionary calendar did that as well in September. But what I found was, if you take them as celebratory days for those cardinal events, it all balances up. So,
and it means that instead of slaving away doing the same thing that we always do, we do take notice of days that are physically and energetically important in terms of our position in space, as it were.
Exactly. We all miss these wonderful days. I think there's a lot of knowledge about celebrating the solstice, you know, and going to Stonehenge on the summer solstice and stuff. But you know, that Christmas has taken us away from the winter solstice onto the 25th, which is when the sun starts to climb in the sky again, you know.
Yeah.
And then you get into the whole Jesus as a sun symbol thing. But, you know, anyway, let's not go there. But
personally, I normally celebrate, we generally, as a bundle of people, generally celebrate the solstice rather than Christmas.
Yeah, me too, and I've been doing that for a number of years now. And so
that means when everybody else is rushing their arse off for Christmas, you could be sitting around just chilling.
Exactly, dude. It's great, isn't it? So we got this year, there was 5 special days. So we've got four quarters of 90 days, 3 periods within each quarter of 30 days. We might call those months. I call them triads because there's 3 of them in each quarter, and each one is made up of 3 smaller periods, which I call deacons, which are 10 days, what we might call weeks at the moment.
I love this constant inclusion of the number 3.
Exactly.
And reaching for the perfect number of 9 in one order of magnitude or other as well. It's very good, very pleasing.
Well, you know, I didn't make this up. You know, all I did was try and observe what's actually there. And I've always had I'll be honest, I have a fascination with the number 9 since a child, and I never really knew why, but I just found the more I looked at the cosmos, I just find the number 9 coming up all the time.
There's whole books about the number 9 out there. It's a genuinely mysterious number, I think.
Yeah, and I remember getting one of those little books about numerology, and it said the ancients believed there were 9 worlds, you know, and that's where I got into my whole 9 world stuff, because to me that meant there were these 9 layers of the onion, you know, within each other, not 9 separate planets or 9 separate galaxies or something, you know.
So
number 9 is very, very special. So we've got these 30 day periods I call triads, of, you know, 3 deacons of 10 days each, and that ties back to the astrology as well, because each zodiac sign has 3 deacons within it. So you could almost give a deacon name to each of these weeks, you know, as well.
And are those equivalent to the degrees across the ecliptic, are they?
Yeah. So you got, they're each 10 degrees.
Brilliant.
And all these things talk about the ancients having 360 days in their calendar. Well, I think they did. They just add intercalary days, so they weren't on the calendar because they were special days.
I know when I was looking into Worlds in Collision, Velikovsky's work, it was pointed out that actually not only have there been times in the past when the sun rose in the west and set in the east, but there was a time in the past when we had a 360-day year. So these intercalary days have had to be introduced by way of compensating our new cycles in space, as it were.
Yeah. That's right. You know, because I always had this question, why have we got 360 degrees in a circle, you know?
Yeah.
It seems almost, you know, but 365 and a quarter days in the cycle where we are now, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of feels like something's moved or shifted, doesn't it?
I think that's right, because one of the biggest henges they found, I think its name's Thornborough, it's huge. It's 3 huge circles connected by straight runways, straight kind of banks, and it's laid out exactly on the lines of the belt of Orion, precisely on the ground. But the interesting thing about that in this context is that one of the circles there is based on 360 degrees and the others are based on 366 degrees.
Ah, that's interesting. I didn't know about that.
We'll see if I can find you a
reference.
You're
going to have to get me a link on that one, Matt.
Yeah, I will. We'll try and look that one up.
Sweet. Yeah, I mean, you know, because I say a lot of this just kind of came to me. I hadn't done any research on a lot of this stuff. It was just looking at the numbers, you know, what was there kind of thing.
I think I think it's a credit to the method that you've been using from the word go, you know, as described at the beginning of the show, about finding out where you are, looking into the nature of the rumours that are going around, and then basically remodelling the thing on the basis of what you find, what you see and what you experience, rather than what you're told is going on.
Yeah, cheers, man. I mean, that's what I've tried to do, you know. And I didn't like this working all the time, you know, 5 out of 7 day thing. So I just kind of jokingly said, well, let's just work 3 days in every 10, you know, let's work 30%. Because there's this thing about, you know, working a third of your time.
Yeah.
But they've conned us into working a third of every day, you know.
We must feel, mustn't we, that if things were distributed more evenly and not being all sucked to the top, then kind of working 3 days out of 10 would probably be fair enough.
Yeah, man. Well, that's, again, that resonated with me. And I, as you say, your gut feel says, yeah, if it was distributed evenly, if everyone's giving 3 days to the community, that's going to work. Yeah. And then the common era we talked about.
I love that as well. Just by the by, instead of using the word work, using the phrase 3 days given to the community, I think that's cracking too.
Cool, man. Yep, thanks for that. Yeah, and then so just to finish off this summary, the common era year number we've talked about being 13,513 when it started, and I started it at the northern bound equinox, the Nobinox. That's the first point of Aries, as it's called, and the astronomers all use that as well as their reference point for right ascension, for measuring the position of stars.
So you've actually got a benchmark between astrology and astronomy too.
Yeah, which is ticks my astronomology box, you know.
Yeah.
the first point of Aries. Astronomological. Yeah. I've had a few bottles of broadside now, mate. I can't even say it myself.
Sounds like it works.
But the first point of Aries is a natural kind of marker in the sky, you know, and everything's measured from there. So why don't we start the year there? You know, that's what the Persian calendar does, and if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me.
Yeah.
And then I built in the 1833 year leap cycle. I've still got to overlay the 19 year Metonic cycle. So in my journal, I've got the moon phases on this calendar, but I haven't put them on the stuff that's online yet. So I'll be doing that over the next few days. And we've got this perennial numbering system. And I found it by having these 5 intercalary days celebrating the equinoxes, the solstices and the year.
Yep.
That it all balances up the seasons as well and takes out most of the variation.
Does make you wonder how we've ended up with something so seriously misplaced, doesn't it, looking at it like that? Very tidy diagram.
Yeah, so slide 32, that's the first sketch I did in my journal, what it might look like. And this is thanks to my mate Morgan, because I was kind of thinking about it at the time in conventional calendar terms, and when I was telling him about it, he said, oh, why don't you draw it like a wheel, you know, why don't you draw it like a circle? And I thought, yeah, that's a great idea. So I did. So that was my first stab at it. And then if you skip on to 33, you've got a little graphic I did, which kind of sums up the year. You got your first intercalary day for the sun in the middle, the yellow one.
Yeah.
And then you go right out to the Nobinox, what we currently call the spring equinox. And you have a day the day in blue, number the second day of the year to celebrate that. And then you start the calendar. So the third day is actually the first day of Aries. And then that ties into the astrology. And instead of our months having Roman names, which totally overlap with this, it brings us back to the natural markers of the ecliptic.
Yeah.
So we got the first three decans there, making up 30 days of the first triad in green.
Yeah.
And then we go on round Taurus, Gemini. So that's quarter one. That's the spring. Or if you're in the southern hemisphere, it's the autumn. But it's the first quarter of the year.
Yeah.
So it's called quarter one. And then you get to day 93, which is the what we call the summer solstice, but it's the northern solstice, so I called it the Nostis.
Yeah.
And you have a celebration for that, which is what we had a few days ago.
Yep.
And then
that'll become a habit.
Yeah, man, I hope so. You know, and that starts quarter two, and you got exactly the same sequence as you had in quarter one. So it's perennial. You don't need a diary. You can have one sheet of paper with 30 days on it, and it's always the same.
But you can't get away with that. You can't have people not having to go out and buy a new book at the beginning of every year.
Yeah, what are you trying to do? Bring down the whole bloody diary industry.
One of the things I like about this is it's working anti-clockwise, which is how most things spin, as far as I can see, the planets and things. They're all going anti-clockwise, and I've always been a bit mystified by why our clocks go clockwise. They should all go in the other direction.
Well, that's right. I figured out why that is. It's because of sundials. So because we spin on the axis anti-clockwise, and we spiral around or behind the sun anti-clockwise, the sun in the sky appears to go clockwise. Well, it does.
Yeah,
because we're going the other way. So if you have a sundial, it moves clockwise. It moves from left to right, which is where clockwise came from. Came from sundials.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why all the clocks go that way and not the other way.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but if you look at what's actually happening, we're going the other way.
Yeah.
And if you look at, there's a great package called Stellarium, which my brother got me onto. Which I absolutely love. It's a fantastic, fantastic program. I encourage everyone to download Stellarium. You can download it for Linux.
Yeah, it is a basic tool for all people interested in the calendar. I know that John Major Jenkins, when he was doing his groundbreaking books on the Maya, refers to that and uses it a lot. It's also very beautiful and fun to play with.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I only got it very recently. You know, I've only had it. I don't know, a couple of months maybe. I did all this without that, you know, and when I got that, I thought, oh, this actually shows what I was seeing in my head is this, it shows it on the, in the package, you know?
Yeah.
And it starts over on the right, with the Novenox, as I called it, you know, the spring equinox, and then the sun moves anti-clockwise back through the across the ecliptic, and you go Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, and so on.
Yeah.
So you got four perennial quarters, all the same, and you've got the other thing I loved with the number nine. You know, you go from the ones in blue. You know, the celebratory days, the intercalary days.
Yeah.
You go from two. You add 90, so you got 93, and then you go 9 to 18 and add 1, you get 184, and then you go 18 to 27 down the bottom, you add 1, you get 275. So there's a lovely mathematical symmetry to it as well, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
With a 9 times table and all that. So, and you've got, you know, you've got the second intercalary day, the third intercalary day, the fourth and the fifth. It's just, yeah, I liked it anyway. So there we go. I mean, I won't.
Well, you have to see what it is. As I say, it's a ruler where all of the units of measure are the same length, which is a bloody good start.
Yeah. So if you skip on to the next slide, what I found then later on, when I started looking at archaic calendars and calendars in use, I found this little graphic on Wikipedia, which is an old archaic Mexican calendar. And it looks very similar.
Yes.
And if you look at that, what you see is there's actually a little loop. There's a loop in that rope.
Yep.
For each of those intercalary days.
Yep, exactly right. It's great when so you what it, get a bit of backup from the ancients.
Yeah, man. And it, so what they're saying is do a little turn here, stop, take time out, and then go back into the circle.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I kind of come up with. So to find this then, it was like, wow, you know. And then I found the ancient Egyptians had 36 weeks of 10 days as well. And, of course, if you look at the time that they were around doing that, it would have been in the previous kind of silver and bronze age time when it was descending back towards ignorance in the Iron Age and when all this knowledge was forgotten.
Yeah.
As we descended in consciousness. So if you go with the whole yoga cycle thing. So that was cool. But let's leave it there. I mean, there's a few more slides in that pack you can have a look at.
Yeah.
But they just kind of summarize the triads and the deacons, and they sort of explain how that works, which we've already really talked about. And I have done a spreadsheet then that you can put your age and days in. Just skip on to slide 38 if you're following us.
Yeah, I've got it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I've got a spreadsheet I'm going to load up onto this Dropbox very soon. Basically, you put your age and days in that third day of the year there, and then it'll print you out a triad headed up with your age and days on the top of each day.
That'd be really great, because I'd certainly like to use this calendar, because it doesn't, apart from Thursday nights when I'm here, it doesn't really make much difference to me what day it is.
Exactly. So, you know, yeah, when you're free, when you get free, it doesn't matter. And it's only when you interact with the system that you need to know what day in the Gregorian calendar it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And as people probably know, I've been using more or less any calendar I can find apart from the Gregorian. And I only do use the Gregorian for communicating with other people who are using the Gregorian calendar. Otherwise, it really makes little odds.
Yeah, man. So have a quick look at slide 39 then. And that's what this spreadsheet will print you out.
Yeah.
So that was the first triad when I started the calendar last year at the Knobinox. But, you know, that
you've chosen to name the days after the planets still. Did you do that from the word go?
Well, I did at that time. I've since stopped using them. I don't, when I write in my journal, I don't write the names of the planets, because a lot of them are Roman and that as well, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So basically I just write, you know, the first of the first 13513. Because it doesn't matter what you call it, because you know the fact that it's the first, you know it's the first day of the month or the triad.
Yeah.
And you know if it's the fifth, it's in the middle. And you know if it's the 15th, it's in the middle of the second one, the second deacon. And you know if it's the 25th, it's the middle of the third deacon. Mm. So you don't really need to know. You don't need to give the day a name at all. You can just use the number.
It's like the calendar equivalent of a comfy chair as opposed to being perched on a precarious bar stool.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah. Dr. Rock tells it like it is. So there you go. So that's the Universal Community Trust calendar.
Well, that's really great, that is. Thanks very much for taking us through that. And obviously, sounds like I'll be at your presentation at the Green Gathering. Which I'm really looking forward to, because there's actually, despite my long experience of looking at calendars, there's a lot of things I didn't know in there, which is really great. That's one of the fantastic things about swapping ideas with people, about being open and accepting of new things rather than rather standoffish about them, is that it improves one's own comprehension.
Well, cheers, man. And I mean, I know next time maybe it's the Green Gathering. We get down there, we have a little smoke, and we're gonna share. You're gonna tell me loads of stuff I don't know about as well. So you know, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, indeed. Can we talk a little bit about your Troubadours Trust?
Well, have you got time to?
Well, it looks like
the Golden Age or not?
Yeah, I have. I'll play the Golden Age first, and we can crack another cup of tea or whatever. There's nobody lined up to take the stream after us, so we can play probably a couple of tunes and then come back and have a quick word about the trust, because I think that's important.
I'd love to.
And then we thought at the end of the show we'd really try our luck, didn't we, Litmus, and see if we can't get you playing a tune live and see what that goes out like over the broadcaster.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'm just conscious that the guys whose house I'm in at the moment, they've all gone to bed.
Oh, right, that's all right. Well, next time, in fact, I'll be hopefully broadcasting live from the Green Gathering on the Thursday night. So perhaps we'll be able
to... We'll have to have a look what day that is in the Universal Community Trust calendar then.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, look, so, I'll put your...
Maybe now, if you're gonna play the Golden Age, maybe because of what we've just talked about, hopefully the lyrics will make sense to people now. What I'm talking about in that song. So
very good. Yeah. Well, I'll put that one on, and I think I'll probably also put "Money Isn't Everything" on by Rob Helen, and that will give us sort of probably 6 or 7 minutes, and then we can come back and just have a quick chat about trusts.
Excellent. All right. See you in a minute.
Wrapping up. Yeah. Indeed. Thanks a lot, Litmus. And
here's
Litmus again with the Golden Age. I only got this one today, so I haven't heard it yet. But here it comes.
So hope you like it then.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. I'll see you in a few minutes, Litmus, and thanks to all
Cheers.
Of you for being out there, guys. It's great to see you all in the chat box. And we'll be back with you in less than 10 minutes.
us to sing. Through structures from the past they built to last, we're rediscovering fast. And so we humbly praise those of the days, of the days of the golden age. Our time is in a revolution.
In the meantime, we've got Litmus back for the last segment of the show, and hopefully we're going to have a bit of a trust, bit of a chat about trusts, Litmus.
Yeah. I hope so, because it's the, for me, it's kind of this, the real solution to you know, really cementing your freedom all over the planet, you know, in a way that really works, and it's very practical and. We should get into it. Yeah,
it's a kind of shared project we've got, isn't it? Because really, I include you in the people that I saw when I first hit the fields in the kind of talk tents, as it were. And we came across many methods, many techniques, many gameplays, and all the rest of it. But of all the things that I heard about in those first couple of years or so, it seemed to me that trust is one of the things that we've lost, and that projects that are endeavouring to foster trust, both with a small T and with a capital T, if you like, are the way to go. And you've formed a Troubadours Trust, haven't you? What's the basic aim of that?
Yeah, it's like you say, trust. The trust thing really came onto my radar, I guess, a couple of years back. And you know, in terms of the free man stuff, it was this guy Dean Clifford. In Canada, I saw a lot of his stuff talking about trusts. I actually ended up on a radio show with him on Wolf Spirit Radio a while back, while I was still down in the Algarve, which was cool, you know, because having watched his stuff, I understood the basics about it a lot more. And of course, when I met Michael Benicia and he was talking about his trust, you know, things started to kind of fall into place. Because I'd been kind of hanging. I'd been holding off, living in sort of limbo land. I'd had this aim in the Freeman bit of my project to what I called it the three tests of lawful rebellion, you know, the testing the law and then realizing they don't stick to it.
Yeah.
The powers that be. So then protesting it by not paying tax, and then ultimately contesting it by getting out of it altogether. And I'd never gone to the end of the third bit, the contest, because I found there were benefits in not doing that, but also because I wasn't really convinced what the answer was, you know. But I just kind of put it, left it there and sort of said, look, by the time right, there'll be an answer, you know, just trust it.
Yeah.
And I think what Michael Benicia did, you know, he provided that answer. So when, like you say, when we met up at festivals and stuff, it was like meeting a long lost brother kind of thing. And, you know, speaking from the heart and saying all the things that I was saying to myself inside, you know, about peace and love and forgiveness and trust in ourselves and everything else. So yeah, I really felt that was the answer. So and coincidentally, you know, I didn't call it a trust, but I'd had this idea about having a gang of troubadours, because you know I figured I was like a bit of a troubadour. I was on the road in my camper van and I was busking in the street and busking in markets in France. You called it busking for cheese, I remember at the time. Cheese,
yeah. Yeah.
So you remember me talking to you about that, and I actually met a guy in France who was called Troubadour, you know, and I thought, I always liked the word troubadour.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, if I had a few mates and we were all doing this, we could kind of...
It seems we've got a bit of a break in transmission at the moment.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just seeing if I can get them to refresh. So we'll, there's Truthful Irish telling us we're back. Thank you very much for that. So we can, that's okay for Laurie as well. That's really great. Thanks for the feedback in the chat box. That's really, really helpful, certainly. So we can return to what you were saying about the Troubadour Trust. If you can go back to how your mind led you to that and what you did with it, let us, that'd be great.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, independent of this, of the whole trust idea, I'd been busking around Europe in my camper van, playing in markets, you know, busking for cheese, as you called it.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a great time getting kind of, you know, coins and cash from the people shopping in markets, and then bread and cheese and stuff from the stall holders who I was kind of entertaining while I was playing there, you know.
So, that's another important thing, isn't it, is recognising that money isn't the only way we're going to get repaid for our efforts in the community.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's what gave me the whole idea, because when I was playing in, this was like, so in the Gregorian, it was winter of 2010 into 2011 time again, and I was in Le Lot in the southwest of France, and I found busking in the market in Cahors was a really good thing, and I met a guy there who was another busker, and he was called Troubadour, and he only spoke French really, and because I was playing, and you know, yeah, I was getting a bit of cash from people, shoppers, but more importantly, I was getting hunks of lovely bread and cheese from the stallholders. So it got me thinking, you know, yeah, you don't have to actually bus for money. You can, you know, you can bus for cheese, like you say. So, so I had this idea that
they were kind of showing their appreciation of you being there as well, rather than chasing the busker away. They were trying to keep him there by feeding him.
Yeah, yeah, they love it in France, man. They love it. You know, you don't get any aggro. They really welcome you in, you know. So I thought, well, you know, maybe if there was a gang of us doing this, like not just me, but a few mates as well, and this troubadour guy, you know, we could all be troubadours, and we could, instead of trying to get gigs in bars and getting paid in cash to then go and buy things, you know, we could play for free, and they can just give us some food and drinks. Often, you know, often I've done gigs for a meal and drinks anyway.
Yeah, I call that ungeared activity, which is basically working for something that you can either eat, drink or set fire to.
Exactly. And we both know what the third one is, don't we?
Yeah, might be one of several things, but yeah, I think we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so of course you can, you know, you can cut out the fiat currency altogether, you know, it's great. So so I thought, yeah, you know, I could get a gang of us together who are all on the road in camper vans and we're all busking, you know, and we can offer to come along and play at a village hall or in a market or a gathering or a party, whatever it is, you know, and you give us some fuel and for the van, and maybe we plug in for the night and charge our batteries up, and you know, we have dinner and you give us some drinks, and no money need change hands, you know. And so that was something I was working on anyway, but I didn't call it the Troubadour Community Trust. I just called it like a band of troubadours or something.
Yeah.
And then of course I was talking to Michael, about this whole community trust idea. And I thought, well, my idea could be part of that, you know, and I could have a community trust called the Troubadour Community Trust. And I talked to him about it, and I became one of the founding trustees of his Universal Community Trust on the solstice last year.
Yeah, so same thing happened to me, of course.
Yeah. You know, it was a very, there you go, the energy of the solstice was good. And it ticked all the boxes, you know, all these boxes I had left unticked on my project. Michael's Universal Community Trust thing just ticked all those boxes, you know, and it gave me a really warm feeling, and it was something I wanted to be part of. And so I think there may be one other transient community, but other than that, I think we got 30 sovereign community trusts now.
Yeah, I think
within the Universal Community Trust.
Yeah.
And I think two of those are like mine, where it's traveling people, you know, so rather than having a geographic base, it's just, you know, being mobile and it's living on the road kind of thing.
Yeah. And it is very
which
much,
I love, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much engaging in the idea of, I mean, community suggests to me people spending time sitting around, sharing ideas, sharing food. Basically, one of the main facets of the Universal Community Trust for me, or the UCT as it's more briefly known, is this commitment of our sweat equity without charge to other members of the various communities that we're forming.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to get into money, because money was only created as a substitute, as a form of exchange anyway, you know.
That's right. It was so that if you couldn't barter or work for whatever it was you wanted, you could have a unit of exchange that was more generally applicable, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, and I mean, at that time when it was backed by tangible things like gold or actual, you know, assets on deposit in a bank that were then lent out, like a modern day building society does now. That was okay, you know, but over the years, where it's got to is that's all been taken away, and you've removed the gold standard, and, you know, you've ended up with fractional reserve lending and usury through interest, and the whole thing's just got completely fucked up, you know.
Yeah, and at the same time as doing all of that, you've given many people the ability to hide behind a kind of limited liability shield, because that all came after trust as well, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so we've ended up a long way away from where we used to be. And I think all we're really trying to do with the whole trust idea is it's a great mechanism for putting it back into something tangible and real, you know, and the ideals of the treaty that we've got about, you know, living in harmony with nature and with respect for our fellow man and all the rest of it, you know, they were all the things I wanted. Yeah, I was very happy to take this idea I'd had and make it a community trust, and it can be a community of traveling, you know, minstrels basically. And that
community effectively exists in amongst a community of communities.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and anyone who wants to be on the road and do anything creative, you don't have to do what I do. You know, you can be a poet or a minstrel or an artist or a juggler, or you could do poi, you know, you could be an acrobat. You can, anything that's creative and entertaining and performance based, maybe, or not even performance based, but creative.
You see, I think that's a solution in itself. Cause one of the challenges that I've personally identified is that there is nowhere for the artists and the poets to go to. You know, they're very much marginalised by the single system approach that we've got. And even if, you know, the place that's being made is virtual, the trust is a genuine home for them, isn't it?
Exactly, totally, yeah. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, the society that we ended up with, you know, and this, what we keep calling the system, is so kind of left-brain orientated and based on routine and structure and logic and all of that. So that's the kind of people it attracts and who dominate in it. And then all the kind of right brain, more spiritual, creative kind of stuff is given a lower kind of level of importance, you know, and is quite detached. So, but, you know, I've got this, I use this phrase, create to be great, you know, because yeah. I really do think when you create, you make some good energy, you know. And
it's a great it's a great meditation. I've seen that recommended to particularly busy people who find it extremely difficult to sit still and still their mind. I've seen several people suggest that that creativity, singing, artwork, playing music, writing poetry, all of those things are in themselves a meditation, but they're quite unique in that they create something outside yourself that other people can appreciate.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you know, that was the aim, if you like, or the idea, and it just fitted really nicely into this UCT thing.
Yeah.
So I became part of that last year on the Nolstice, and we celebrated it on the Nolstice just passed a few days ago.
And again, there's a couple of things there. It strikes me about the UCT is that what we've got is quite a few really applied minds working on a single project. And as I keep saying, working together, working with other people on something is much better than sitting back and watching. And so it is a creative act in itself.
Yeah, totally. And it's positive, you know. It's not sitting around moaning about the system and saying how crap everything is and looking at the news and David Icke headlines to tell you how shit it all is and to get depressed. It's and I don't mean that. I mean, David Icke, certainly big inspiration to waking me up originally out of the system. But, you know, you get to a point where you don't need to know anymore how fucked up it is. You know, you don't really need to look at all that stuff of conspiracy stuff and that anymore, because you know how much do you need to know how bad it is? So
indeed, we need to make energetic progress in the other direction, which means very much turning our back on that sort of thing once it's done its job, which is to turn us on, really.
Exactly that, man. That's exactly what I mean. And you know, thanks, David, for helping wake me up and carry on. But you know, I don't need to give my energy to negative things anymore. I want to give my energy to positive things that manifest the world that I want to live in and I want to be part of. You know, you don't have to fight the system. You know, because it's all about conflict and negative stuff. Then, and instead of trying to fight the system, you can create a new world.
Yeah.
And show the system how good it can be, you know.
It very much strikes me that the whole UCT thing is more based on that slide you showed earlier, the one that said you are ace on it.
Yeah, exactly that.
You can remind me of the characteristics of that one, because
it was thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, it was when you live in unconditional love, you are ace.
Yeah.
So it's the U is understanding, the R is the realization that you relate to others and the reflection that you see yourself in others and others in yourself, and then the ace bit is acceptance, compassion, and empathy. So and that, yeah, when I met Michael and listened to him speak, that's what he was saying to me. You know, he was saying all the things that I say to other people. So I was like, well, this is something great I want to be part of, you know? And so I just added the word community and trust onto my troubadour idea. And there we go. And what I think what we're all finding with the UCT is you don't really have to give people actions, and you don't have to say, right, who's going to do this one? Because everyone just volunteers for the things that they'd naturally like to do. And you can share out. And it's not like a workload. It's like stuff you really into, and it's fun to do, and it's not like work at all, you know. So it's a great thing, and it's growing all the time now, and I really, you know, have a good positive feeling about where it's going and what it's going to do, and I want to tell as many people as I can about it.
Yes, I think that's the way I'm going with that one as well. And I think that's another important point you made there, is that another thing I've noticed is that if we're working as both you and I do on kind of crews at festivals and things like that, then there isn't a leader. There isn't anybody telling everybody else what to do. What happens is that the trust or the community of people that is responsible, as it were, for doing the thing, if we see something that needs doing, then we do it.
Yeah, you just do what you like doing anyway, and between the lot of you, it all balances out and works.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And that's a pretty whole solution. Well, I think we're getting to 20 to 1 in the morning and stuff, which we put in a really good stint there, Litmus. Thank you very much.
It's amazing, isn't it, mate? Because when you're talking about all this stuff, and you just don't get tired, you know. You just keep the energy, and I could carry on all night, but obviously people go to bed.
I really noticed that when I was at the Fire in the Mountain Festival earlier this year. I accidentally stayed out of bed all night, two nights, Friday and Monday it was, and I was drinking beer all night, so it wasn't usual for me to stay awake under those conditions, but it was. Talking with people that did that to me, as you say, I just didn't get tired. I just looked up and it was morning.
Yeah, you know, and I think we all found this at our UCT gathering the other day. Well, you know, we were up all night pretty much singing and round the fire and all that and sharing all the good stuff. And we had a long session the next day, and it was like, oh, is it over already, you know? It was like, didn't feel long at all.
I think that's a sure sign that you're involved in something that's worth being involved in.
Exactly, and I'm finding these days, especially when you're getting lots of sunlight and fresh air and all that, not so much being back here, but I generally find I only need about 3, at the most 5, and often only 3 hours sleep a night, you know, and I'm wide awake and all excited. Let's get up and get on with all the good stuff, you know.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was in Spain, and the weather forecast just said scorchio across the bottom of the screen for the next 7 days. Need less food too, less sleep and less food.
That's right, less energy input, yeah. Because you're high on life, so yeah. I'd recommend everyone to go to www.universalcommunitytrust.net and have a look at the stuff there and check out, see if there's a trust, a sovereign trust as part of that within your existing geographic area, and if there is, you know, get in touch and go along and see if you can be part of something really positive.
And if there isn't, think about getting in touch with us and setting up your own sovereign community trust.
Yeah, there's that, definitely that as well. If there's not one, set one up.
Yeah, because I think that's definitely going to be something that we will be hearing more of on the Dr. Rock Show, I'm sure. It's been 2 or 3 years in the making. It's been carefully done. People are committing their time and their sweat equity to each other, and they are starting to take on the activities necessary to ensure that it can be a community that gets on with itself rather than a bunch of communities, none of whom know what the other's doing, because we'll be able to do a lot better if we're sharing rather than buying.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if there's not a trust near you, all you need to do to create one is make a deed. Yeah. Make a deed, basically.
In fact,
and all you need is a grantor and a 3 parties: grantor, trustee, trustees, and beneficiaries. And all the information you need is on the website there. And if you want to check out my bit of that, it's the Troubadour Community Trust, and that's on my projectfreeman.com website, and you'll see it right on the top of the homepage in a little menu there, Troubadour Community Trust. Click on there, it'll tell you about it, and you can also link to the UCT through that as well.
I think in the meantime, Litmus, it's probably time for me to say thank you very much.
Is it over already?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm sure we can find other things we can talk about. You'd be more than welcome to come back on and chat again. I think people have enjoyed what you've had to say.
I've loved every minute of it, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, hopefully we'll catch up with you out here on the right side of the skirmish zone at some point before you return to sunnier climes. And
yeah, definitely.
I'll definitely be seeing you at the Green Gathering, and we can perhaps plot our next outing on Media Streaming International Radio.com.
Sounds good, man. You're not going to keep me out at Cymru long, but I'll be down there soon.